To BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Today is Monday, June 11th, 2012, and it's been a fun weekend if you like crazy roller coasters that are screaming along blindly in the dark. And that's kind of what's been happening with the Liberty Movement for the last, what, 4 days? Technically, I suppose 3 days, but really some of us saw this coming earlier. And so before I get into that, I want to touch on emails. If you want to talk to me, if you want to send me an email, do so. Send it to Ben at badquaker.com. It's kind of confusing because there's also on the website at badquaker.com, there's listing badquaker at badquaker.com. And you can send me an email there as well. It gets washed through several layers of other people saying, hey, Ben, you got an email over here. But if you want to send me an email, send it directly to Ben, B-E-N, at badquaker.com. And I'll get it right off. And either is acceptable, really, but it's just the ones that go to Ben go directly to me as opposed to the ones that go to Bad Quaker go to everybody. So, and I did get behind pretty severely in trying to, I like to answer every one of my emails if possible. I'm not always able to do that, but I like to do that. And I kind of got behind, so I was running 3 or 4, even 5 days behind, and I apologize for that. But if you send me an email, I'll do my best to get back to it as quickly as possible. I'd really do try to answer all my emails. And a couple of noteworthy emails that I've received recently. One was from a listener in Sweden, and I didn't actually know that we had listeners in Sweden. So it was really refreshing to read the email, and I really enjoyed the email. It was very stimulating, and I learned things too from it. That was really great. There is a German podcast listing that lists Bad Quaker, and I don't know if that's where the person in Sweden found us or not. I'm not sure, but I do know that the German podcast listing, it's I think it's just called something like podcast dot whatever the letters are for German websites. I think it's like DE or something like that. Anyway, and badquaker.com is listed there, and we're getting quite a few downloads from that direction. So just wanted to say hi to all the people who are downloading us through by means of that German podcast site. Now, I did get another email. I got several that sought to correct me on something that I blundered into. I don't have any idea what I was thinking at the time, but I was talking last week about the hunter-gatherer lifestyle as compared to farming. And there's been quite a bit of research on this, and I knew about this. You know, it was back in the back of my mind. I don't know what I was thinking when I put together my notes. But I had mentioned that the flutes that were found in Germany that were, I don't have the notes in front of me, but if memory recalls, they were like 40,000 years old. Those flutes were evidence that there was farming because people would have had more free time. And actually the opposite is true. And I don't know how I got that stuck in my head. You know, it's sometimes, I don't know, I can't really make an excuse for that. It's just, I was absolutely backwards on that. There's quite a bit of evidence that supports that the hunter-gatherer had more free time than the farmer. And there's also evidence that the early farmers who were not grain intensive farmers that were that farmed a diversity of items, that there was far more leisure time with them than there was the high-intensity grain farming that began to appear. You know, I talk about Jericho as the first appearance of the state, and with the appearance of Jericho came the appearance of high-intensity grain farming. And I make the argument that the state, one of the aspects that guaranteed the support of the state was high-intensity grain farming, because they could feed slaves and they could tax easier using, you know, using the high intensity. And the state tends to like their subjects to have a high grain diet, because it's easier for the state to control. There's all kinds of layers of thought on that. But either way, I want to point out where I was wrong. I was wrong in my assumption that the flutes found in Germany were indication that there was farming. There's no connection whatsoever. There's no reason to make that logical leap. The hunter-gatherer lifestyle produced quite a bit of leisure time, so that I was completely off on that. Of course, that doesn't affect the real evidence in New Guinea. I believe it was New Guinea, where farming was taking place 30,000 years ago, still 20,000 years before the appearance of the state. So my real point in that was that farming is not a product of the state, that farming took place for thousands of years before there was a state, and that the state required high-intensity grain farming to exist. And that's an argument that James C. Scott made very successfully in his book, The Art of Not Being Governed. So, my apologies for somehow in my goofy brain just thinking I could, you know, connect flutes in Germany to farming. Sorry about that. And thank you very much to the email writers that let me know my blunder. And here's the thing, you know, I'm a human and I make mistakes, and my brain is full of mistakes. And that's the really, I have to pat myself on the back a little bit. When I see that I've done something wrong, when I see that I've said something wrong, or that I've followed a fallacy of some kind or another, it's the deep desire of my heart to correct that and get my mind going in the right direction and embrace the truth, because I deeply believe that it's the biblical statement. Even if you don't believe the Bible, you can see the value of this statement, that it's the truth that will set you free, and that's really that's a fact. The closer you are to accepting the truth on things, you know, sometimes it's not comfortable. Sometimes freedom is not comfortable. But the more thoroughly you can seek out and embrace the truth, no matter what you have to do to your ego to get that ego out of the way and grasp that truth, the truth will bring you more and more freedom. Whereas any kind of falsity, any kind of false hopes that you put your beliefs on, or any, you know, anything like that that is not embracing the truth, ultimately it's going to cause you more harm in the long run. So I really appreciate the emails pointing that out, that I was mistaken on that. Thank you very much. Okay, and again, hi to folks in Sweden. Thanks for emailing me. And one more time, hi to the folks downloading from the German podcast site. And I'm assuming some of those are English-speaking Germans, and I'm assuming some of those are probably Americans in Germany for whatever reason. But either way, I want to try to not make the badquaker.com podcast, you know, strictly an American thing or strictly a U.S.-based thing. And it's hard to do sometimes. I've tried in the past to really not let myself fall into the American trap of just seeing everything through American eyes. We in the United States have a tendency to do that far too much, and we end up assuming, you know, this whole series of fallacies that somehow, you know, everything is America's responsibility and we're the protector of the world, and when we look at everything through the glasses of the American view, and it really twists our perspective of things when we do that. So it's really something that I seek not to do. I really want to be able to look at things not just through the eyes of an individual in, you know, in North America, in the U.S., in Ohio. I want to be able to open my eyes and see beyond that and see the bigger picture of humanity. Now, I have a couple of things that are going to sound maybe a little harsh today. You know, I alluded a moment ago to all of what's happening in the last 3 or 4 days. And it's going to be really hard to talk today without saying "I told you so" constantly. When my kids were young, my wife and I have 3 kids, and they are all 3 wonderful, successful adults. We really appreciate them and love them. When they were small, one of the things that I, one of the methods that I used to try to teach my children would be, you know, oftentimes, let's put it this way, oftentimes a parent will say, you know, to their child, we'll use the name Johnny for the child. I don't have any children named Johnny, but we'll just use Johnny as an example. So Johnny starts to do something or other, and mommy says, Johnny, don't do that. And Johnny says, why? And for, you know, maybe lack of time to explain something, or perhaps just because she doesn't want to get into it, or perhaps, you know, for whatever reason, she says, because I said so, that's why, don't do that. Well, that carries very little legitimacy in a child's mind. They pretty much look at that as an excuse, and it's very difficult to get respect out of a child if you can't give them something better than that to chew on. And I realize that sometimes that's all you've got time for. Sometimes you don't want to have to go through, you know, 3 hours of explaining how thousands of years of history have taught us to behave one way and not behave another. You know, I'm thinking of something as simple as washing your hands. It's not necessary to sit down with a child and explain to them how germs work and all these kind of things. If you just say, because I said wash your hands, go wash your hands, do it right now. And so I understand that you can't always take 2 hours out of your day to explain every little thing to every child. But I did want to mention that. But this excuse of just dumping it off and saying, well, because I said, that it just doesn't, in a long run, it doesn't hold with a child, and it won't work in the long run. You have to build a certain level of trust by laying foundation stones one after the other, so that when an important time comes and you say, I can't really explain it right now for whatever reason, just trust me, this is right, and if you do this, then bad things are going to happen. So for example, let's say you have a little child and you say, you know, don't touch the stove, it's hot. And the child has never really been burned, so they don't really understand the concept. Well, you can't very well grab their hand and shove it onto the hot stove and burn them. That would not be, don't do that. and so you need a level of trust with the child so that they can accept what you're saying without having to burn their hand to learn the lesson. The same thing goes with, like, running out into the street. Johnny, don't run out into the street. Well, Johnny can't really grasp this until you give Johnny some kind of reasoning that Johnny can think of and understand, and then he'll understand why he's not supposed to run in the street. But you can't always do that. You can't always take 45 minutes and stop everything and say, okay, now let's explain what happens when you run in the street. You have to develop a level of trust with your child so that when you say don't run in the street and they say, why not? And you say, because I know what I'm talking about. Just do what I say and we'll cover it later. Then there can be trust there so that the child can say, well, I don't really get it, but I do trust mom or I do trust dad, therefore I'm not going to do whatever this thing is. And so this is something I strove for with my own children. I would, whenever possible, I would attempt to teach them a lesson in a situation by saying, okay, now here's what's wise, and if you do this, you're going to get these results. But if you don't follow this pattern, if you do these things over here, then these bad things are going to happen. And so I would demonstrate to my children whenever possible, so that I could develop the level of trust, so that when the time came that I said, don't do that, that's bad, or don't do that, that will bring you a bad result, they didn't have to go ahead and challenge it. They had a certain level of trust, and they knew that, well, I may not understand all this, but Dad understands these things, and so I'm going to go ahead and trust him on this. And one of the methods I used in this was to sometimes let them crash. Now, that doesn't mean I'd let them burn their hands on a stove or let them run into a street. But on less severe things that weren't going to involve them being maimed or killed or whatever, I would let them go into a situation where I knew that they were going to fail. But I would give them clear warning ahead of time. This is how this is going to be, and if you do A, B, and C, you're going to get results D. And when you do this, when you're all done, and D happens, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, I told you so, so that you'll understand that when I'm telling you these things, they're for a reason. I'm not just being a bad guy, I'm not just trying to control you or order you around or make you behave the way I want. The things that I'm telling you because I love you, and I want you to grow up safely with a happy and fulfilling life. So I tell you these things, not to be your boss or not to be lord over you, but so that you can have a better life. That's why I tell you these things. And so when these situations happen and I come back and I tell you, I told you so, it's so that you can learn that sometimes I'm right because I've been through these situations before and I know how they work. And you can avoid having to learn the hard lesson by listening to wisdom and learning the easier lesson. So one of the things that I would do with my children is I would sing a sort of a made-up song where I would sing, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. And I would sing this song to the tune of the song from The Lion King, In the Jungle, The Mighty Jungle, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. I would sing the I Told You So song. Now, you know, I didn't go a full 2.5 minutes with the and completely work out the lyrics. I would just do enough of it to notify them that indeed I was showing them that this is exactly what I told them would happen, and they could have avoided the bad thing by listening to me to begin with. But I tried whenever possible not to use that level of aggression to say, it's because I said and you're going to do it this way. I tried as best as I could to present to them options and show them that the option that I was leading them towards was based on my own experience and failures and hard lessons that I had learned over the years. So then, I said all that to say this. Ron Paul supporters, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. You see, I was thinking today, this weekend, as I was considering what I was going to do my podcast this Monday morning on, I was thinking of different ways of doing this podcast. And one of the ways I had actually planned to do this, and I started Sunday morning actually putting together a sort of a frame of a podcast so that I could just add my voice to it on Monday and publish it. And then, well into the day on Sunday, I decided, no, I'm not going to do that, because for a couple reasons. Well, what I had planned on doing was make a compilation of there's probably been 20 or 25 podcasts that I've done in the last year where I said, this is what's going to happen. The Ron Paul, we're building a Ron Paul bubble, and that bubble's going to pop. And I had talked about the GOP would step in, and they would create a false Ron Paul, and they would offer that false Ron Paul to the Ron Paul followers. And multiple times I even said, there's a real good likelihood that that false Ron Paul will be Rand Paul. And I said, some of the followers are going to, some of the Ron Paul followers are going to, buy this. They're going to go for it. And others are going to be disillusioned and they're going to be crushed. And others are going to just, they're going to realize that the Ron Paul message is bigger than the individual man, Ron Paul. And it's really not going to affect them that great. So my intention was to create a sort of a montage. Montage, is that the right word? Anyway, I was going to take little clips, little snippets from all the different, from at least 15 or 20 podcasts where I had said that this was going to happen. Now, I will admit, I really thought it was going to happen closer to November. I did not expect it to happen while the summer was still on. I fully expected the Ron Paul bubble to pop after the convention, sometime after the convention. But, you know, timing, so my timing's not so great. So I was off on my timing. But it's happening still pretty much exactly like I said was going to happen. And even up until a couple weeks ago, I think it was about a week or week and a half ago, I specifically said Rand Paul is the false Ron Paul that the GOP is going to offer. And then last week I spent several podcasts talking about the great man theory and how, and I was trying to build up for Friday because the things were really heating up by Thursday, and I knew that something was going to happen, but I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to come down. But I knew that there was you don't have to actually see the flames to know there's a fire. And I knew something was going on by midweek Thursday. So that's why last week I put so much emphasis on talking about false histories and the great man theory, and I talked about Herbert Spencer, and I tried to make as much preparation as possible so that when this hit, that at least my listeners would expect it and know what was about to happen. And then Friday, the announcement from Rand Paul came Thursday night, and Friday morning, by 9 o'clock I was here like I am right now. It's currently 9:40 a.m. on Monday morning, the 11th. So and that's about the time that I try to record my podcast, is around between 8 and 10 o'clock in the mornings. Well, Friday morning at around 9 o'clock, I was recording Friday's podcast, and I had it published, I think, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it was by about noon on Friday that I had it published. And that wrapped up almost all my time between actually recording the podcast and then doing all the editing and then getting it up on the website. That took almost my whole morning. It typically does take my whole morning, but it took almost my whole morning Friday. So I wasn't actually able to go on to the internet and look around and see what people were saying. So I was actually, what I was doing, even though I had read some things, you know, at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning when I was preparing my notes, I knew who specifically, I'll name a name in a minute, but I knew who specifically was going to fall into this whole trap that I was talking about, and I knew some people specifically were not going to fall for the trap, and I knew others were going to come out in defense of Ron, some were going to come out in defense of Rand, some were going to come out in defense of the movement, and some were going to move towards clearer logic. And now some names. Jack Hunter, the Southern Avenger. I fully expected him Friday when I was recording the podcast. I fully expected him to come out as a full-blown Rand Paul apologist. What I didn't really expect, because I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jack Hunter, and I have listened to him, his broadcast, and I've read his writings, and I've really enjoyed his stuff for several years now. I've always understood that really in his heart he's a Republican, and really, you know, he has a deep desire for liberty, but everything he looks at is skewed through the glasses of a hardcore Republican. I've understood that right along. And that's why I knew that Jack Hunter, the Southern Avenger, would entirely embrace the Rand Paul endorsement of Mitt Romney. I knew he would embrace the false Ron Paul. And so I didn't name him Friday because I don't know him personally, but we've had some brief conversations in different places, and I thought, well, I don't want to throw him under the bus. You know, I don't want to just be so cruel as to name him like that even before he has a chance to express himself. But by the time that I published on Friday, he was already putting out notices that he was going to put out a YouTube video and give his position on it. But he hadn't put out that YouTube video yet. Then Friday, when he put out that YouTube video, he followed exactly the way I had thought that he would go. He gave a horrible, horrible, pathetic defense of Rand Paul and Rand Paul's direction in trying to embrace the GOP. And then he went on Russia TV, Russia Today. I believe it's Russia Today. He went on their show, and the journalist on there, the reporter, the on-air reporter, whatever, the person, the on-air personality, just savagely tore into Jack. And poor Jack really looked like a fool. I mean, he really did. He tried to hold his ground and hold his position as a Rand supporter, while the Russia Today reporter just savagely brutalized him, as she should have. Good job. I don't know her name, but she just did a fantastic job. And poor Jack really didn't look good at all. And then, and I started chatting with him at or around that time, and he, in speaking with me, he attempted to defend himself even further. And I literally scolded him for it, because this behavior is shameful. For someone who has attempted to embrace the truth to not be able to see the GOP's tricks any better than that, that it's just, it's pathetic. That's all you can say about it. Now, there were other responses as well. Lou Rockwell made me proud. I don't agree with a lot of things about Lou Rockwell, and there are things on his website that disturb me greatly. But Lou Rockwell came out with a wonderful defense of liberty on Friday, and it just made me very, very happy that Lou embraced the what I would consider the correct position on Friday. Others, over on YouTube, there's a group called 4409 that I've been subscribed to in one form or another for a long time, and those guys, the folks over at 4409, and I really hope to see them at Porkfest this year. I was really concerned. I wasn't sure which direction they were going to go. I thought they were going to go in the right direction, but I kind of feared, because I wasn't sure, because I've never really had direct communications with them, so I didn't know how they were going to handle it. And they made me so proud. I mean, they just came right into the right direction, and they laid out a video, and the guy from 4409 just... man, he just put it right. He hit the nail right square on the head. It was a thing of beauty. And so, you know, it really warms my heart over the weekend that so many of the Ron Paul supporters just understood what happened, understood that Rand was simply being a tool of the GOP and was attempting to fill his own pockets and to secure his position while completely backstabbing the entire Ron Paul movement. And one other, Adam Kokesh. Good job, Adam. Adam took a very, very mature position on this. And Adam was another one that I was unsure about, because he's pretty good on a lot of things. But, you know, he's young to our movement, and sometimes he gets a bit enthusiastic. But I was very, very happy that Adam took such a wise position, and a calm and an intelligent position. I was very happy with that. Others showed extreme amounts of shock and disappointment and bafflement. And I saw quite a few people that were just beside themselves. They didn't know what to say or what to do about this. And it really tugged at my heart. You know, Alex Jones said that he didn't see this coming. He should have, but he didn't see it coming. He said he had put down his defenses completely, and was completely taken by this announcement by Rand. And I made the statement on Facebook, you know, well, Alex, you should have been listening to my podcast because I was predicting this a year ago. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to break for the commercial right here. And when we come back, I'm going to get, I'm going to go away from the, well, I don't know. We'll see what happens when I come back from the commercial. I get to ranting sometimes and who knows what direction it'll go. Stick with me. I'll be right back. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug-out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks. Well, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break. I wanted to say something that I began to say before the commercial break, and then I distracted myself and wandered off into other babbling nonsense. What I had intended to do Sunday, and I started actually working on it, was to get clips of previous podcasts that I had done where I warned that this was going to happen with Ron Paul and with the Ron Paul bubble, and, you know, I actually started putting together what the podcast was going to be like for today. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to just have a collection of me going, you know, saying the same thing over and over and over for an hour. I don't see a profit in that. Long-term listeners will have known that I've been saying this for a long time, and anybody who, you know, who needs to research it, you can just do a Ron Paul search at BadQuaker.com, and there's, you know, hours of me there saying these things. I will give you this. I'll put a link on today's page for today's podcast. I'll put a link to one that to a podcast number 119 that I did, where the last 10 minutes, if you download it and then move to the 50-minute mark, or you can listen to the whole thing if you want, but at the 50-minute mark, I begin to lay out an argument, and for the last 10 minutes of that podcast, that's podcast number 119, on that podcast, the last 10 minutes, I don't think I could make it any clearer as to what I was saying was going to happen. And again, I was off on my timing. I thought it would happen this fall. I did not expect the Ron Paul bubble to pop like this during the summer. I really, really thought it would go into the fall. I thought it would be closer to November. I thought it would at least be after the convention. But either way, if you download podcast 119, of the BadQuaker.com podcast and go to the 50-minute mark. And I think I actually start talking about it like something like 51 or 52 minutes or something. But the, you know, it's easy to remember 50, so go to the 50-minute mark and listen to it there. Now, I want to cover a couple things. Like I was saying earlier in the podcast, last week I was trying to lay some groundwork because I could see this. I could see the tension growing on the Ron Paul bubble. I could see it starting to give way on the edges, and I could see it, you know, the flesh of the Ron Paul bubble starting to tear on the edges. And so I did several podcasts last week where I talked about the great man theory, and I talked about Herbert Spencer, and you know, I tried to give at least somewhat of his explanation to the great man theory, and there was some misunderstanding of what I was saying, but what I want to really get out here is this team mentality that is within the Ron Paul movement. This team mentality that is such a tool of the state that drives Republicans to say anybody but a Democrat, and it drives Democrats to say anybody but a Republican, and it drives people to say anybody but, you know, anybody but Romney, or anybody but Obama, or anybody but Clinton, or anybody but George W. Bush, or anybody but Hillary, or any of these things where the state just loves it when you allow the team mentality to overwhelm logic and reason and morality, and you're more interested in fighting with your team than actually stop and asking yourself, is the team doing something productive? Are they actually moving me in the direction I want to go? Or are we just living in the hype of the moment? And that's kind of one of the things with politics that happens. You get to focusing too much on the moment-by-moment issues of what's going on, and you tend to lose focus on the bigger battle that's raging around you. You get completely... it's really easy if you listen to the news too much, or you know, if you get too involved in any particular single issue, you tend to have the old comparison is with a horse and blinders. If you take a look at race horses, they put blinders on the horse so that he can't see the horses beside him when he's running, because they're a distraction. You have to keep the horse running directly ahead and keep his head straight and running in one direction. Well, you do that to control the horse. Well, I don't like to be controlled. I like to be able to see around me. And if I'm throwing my whole life into a race for somebody else, you know, I want a hint of that. I want to realize what's going on. And that's kind of what you do with a racehorse. All you have to do is look at the way they've, you know, how they train a racehorse all its life for one season of racing, and then they run him so hard that there's a good possibility he's not going to even get his way out of that one season in, with his health. And that's kind of what the state would like to do with each and every one of us. They want us so focused on one thing that we can't see that we're destroying ourselves just fighting on that one thing. We're fighting for the team. We're staying with the team. We're doing all this stuff without realizing whether or not the team is really going where we want it to go and doing what we want it to do. So in my last week, in my attempts to try to get people to see that this cult of the personality is destructive, that this worshiping of the great man is destructive, and when you apply it to Ron Paul or anybody, Ronald Reagan, you know, Abraham Lincoln, it doesn't matter who, when you develop this personality cult around someone and you raise them up on high as the great man, the savior, the one that's going to get us through this, you're setting yourself up for a serious disappointment at the very least, possibly much worse. So that, for that reason, last Friday's episode of the podcast I named Hooray for Captain Spaulding. And in case you didn't get the reference, that was a reference to a Marx Brothers movie where Groucho Marx was attempting to portray himself as this great African explorer, Captain Spaulding. And so he, when he's introduced into the movie, he's showing up at this garden party for this rich lady, and he's the guest, the main guest of the day. And so there's this great hoopla that Captain Spaulding is coming, Captain Spaulding is coming, and the band strikes up to play, and there's this huge anticipation of the great Captain Spaulding. And of course, there is no Captain Spaulding. It's a character that Groucho Marx has invented in order to perpetuate his con upon these rich people, and attempt to, as Groucho Marx often does in his movies, it would be an attempt to fill his pockets at the expense of some rich idiot. And so, Captain Spaulding, whether or not he really existed in the movie, is not the point. But Groucho Marx assumed this personality and became the great man, and then abuses everyone under the guise of his false authority. Well, so whether we're saying hooray for Captain Spaulding, or whether we're saying hooray for Ron Paul, or whether we're saying hooray for Gary Johnson, and let me just interrupt with that, because that's what some people are doing. They saw what happened with Ron Paul, and they're like, oh no, the Ron Paul bubble pops, and their hero worship fades out of their eyes, and they immediately desire another hero to fill that spot. And so I'm seeing these people, this is one of the reactions of people who are hardcore Ron Paul followers who have now had their bubble popped for them, and they're saying, oh, well, we have to go to Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson is our last hope. We have to run over there, quick, everybody into the Gary Johnson camp. This is the direction we're going now. You're being a slave of the team, and you're as much as a tool when you're doing that. You're as much of a tool as, Jack Hunter, the Southern Avenger, when he becomes a complete apologist for Rand Paul. You're still being a tool. That's all you're doing. To run to Gary Johnson and to expect him. And, keep in mind, it wasn't that long ago that I did a podcast exposing Gary Johnson as a liar, and showing that he was willing to falsify himself and portray himself as something that he was not. So to run to Gary Johnson, there's a scene in Hamlet where Hamlet's father, the king, has died, and Hamlet's uncle has become the king, and Hamlet's mother, the queen, has married Hamlet's uncle to solidify the position of king onto the uncle. And Hamlet is just baffled by this, and he holds the medallion that is an emblem, that has an emblem of his father on it, and he holds the medallion that has the image of his uncle, and he holds them in front of his mother, and he says, how can one who has embraced this settle for this? And the moment you can see, as you read the play through, you can, or if you see it done by quality actors, you can see the moment where brain cells in Hamlet's brain are just popping with confusion. How can a person who once loved this now embrace this thing? And that's the situation with Ron Paul and Gary Johnson. Ron Paul is a man of knowledge, is a man of understanding. He understands the depths of money and of how the government functions in doing all the things that it does, economically speaking. He's written extensive and very thought-provoking books on the topic, and he's given moving speeches on the topic, and Gary Johnson is athletic and climbed a mountain and uses pot. I mean, look at the two images. How can you hold up one and say, I am this, and I support this, and this is the man that I have embraced through this presidential campaign? And then when that dies, and you pick up the other, and you say, well, it's the best I got. I guess I'll go with this. Would you settle after having tasted a steak? Would you then settle for a hot dog and think that they're the same? I don't understand that. I don't see Gary Johnson as anything but a shallow opportunist. And why someone would embrace him when everything that we've seen has exposed what he really is. I don't know how a person can do that. The only explanation that I can come up with is that the person is that embraces Gary Johnson in lieu of Ron Paul is really so engulfed in their worship of the state that they can only see the state as the solution, and Gary Johnson provides for them an excuse that they can get behind and a hope that somehow someone in the state can fix the state, that somehow the brutality of government can be used to fix government. And Gary Johnson now represents that. Unfortunately, those people never understood that Ron Paul's message was just the opposite. Although Ron Paul, and I say Ron Paul was to a certain extent deceiving some of his followers by letting them think he could, or that he wanted to actually become president. Ron Paul didn't ever really want to become president. Lou Rockwell, his very close friend, explains this in the Russia Today video that came out Friday. Ron Paul always understood that he could not become president and did not want to be president. This is all about a cause. This is all about a greater thing, a greater goal. It is not about getting into the position of president and then somehow fixing government. Unfortunately, Ron Paul never made that clear to many of his followers. And so that's the source of the confusion. That's why these statists who worship the state and who still have it in their mind that the government can be fixed by getting in the government and using the violence of government to fix the violence of government, those people are now running to Gary Johnson. Or, in the case of Jack Hunter and his ilk, they're embracing Rand Paul's treasonous leap into the heart of the GOP. And that's the real danger of what Ron Paul has represented to all of his followers. That rather than clarifying right from the beginning, and rather than making it very obvious and very understandable, Ron Paul has allowed people to believe that he really was trying to become president. And what I would accuse Ron Paul of is allowing that lie to be believed as truth and never seriously making an effort to clarify it, so that people volunteered and gave their time and volunteered and gave their money, more money than they could afford. They gave to the Ron Paul campaign, believing that Ron Paul actually was going to try to be the president of the United States. They did this, and I believe that's deception on the part of Ron Paul, and I believe it's deception on the part of many of the Ron Paul supporters who knew that that was not what he was going to do. Now, that's maybe a harsh accusation, but that's the way it appears to me, and that's the way it's appeared for quite some time. Ron Paul has said over and over in many different situations, mostly in speeches with the Mises Institute, that you can't fix government using government, that you cannot bring liberty to people incrementally through the use of government. He's said these things, and he's, you know, there's a poster floating around quoting with different images, quoting Ron Paul in different locations and in different times, showing that deep inside he is an anarchist, he's an anarcho-capitalist. And yet, what does he say? What does he do? How does he live his life? I pointed out, I think it was Friday's podcast episode, that I pointed out that however Ron Paul may have made an effort to raise Rand, his son, to understand these aspects of liberty that we talk about, however, whatever Ron did and whatever Ron said to try to influence Rand as a young man and as a child to understand these aspects of liberty, Ron Paul's actions were just the opposite. As Ron Paul gave speeches at the Mises Institute saying that government was not the solution, Ron Paul continued to take a salary and work inside government and use the aggression of government to move stolen money in the government back towards his district to get himself reelected. He actually was living the opposite of what he was saying in his books and in his lectures at the Mises Institute. So now there's a harsh accusation on my part towards someone that I have great appreciation for. I do have great appreciation for Ron Paul, but I am not a hero worshiper. I do not allow myself to glaze my eyes over and ignore the truth just because I have this image in my mind of a man that I want to worship. I cannot allow myself to do that. Okay, let me tell you what. Let me pull up something here from Dave Hodges. If you're unfamiliar with Dave Hodges, Dave has a show called The Common Sense Show. And Dave has been a consistent Ron Paul supporter for a long time. And I want to read a little bit of this for you. This came out Sunday, I believe. Yeah, Sunday. And where I found it was from Freedom's Phoenix website. I'm not sure where else it was reprinted. But I'm going to try to get through this as quick as possible. I won't read the whole thing, but I'm going to try to give an honest view of, or an honest, anyway, I'll read this. Dave Hodges, here we go. I awoke several days ago to a devastating punch in the gut. I was overcome by feelings of abandonment and betrayal, just like the feeling that a husband would experience when he realizes that his wife has been unfaithful and his best friend is his friend's new lover. Oops, his best friend is his wife's new lover. I am experiencing anger, depression, and a sense of profound discouragement as I feel compelled to write these words. Ron Paul has done more to wake up millions of former banksters serving sheeple in this country to the tyranny. Oops, I read that wrong. Ron Paul has done more to wake up millions of former bankster serving sheeple in this country to the tyranny that is the New World Order than anyone else. He has helped to expose the criminal Federal Reserve and the general and pervasive sellout of Americans and our sovereign interests by the bankster minions, i.e. Obama and Romney. As a result, millions of Americans put their faith in this country doctor who has had one of the best voting records in the history of the House of Representatives. I will be eternally grateful to Ron Paul for his tireless support and defense of freedom. Ever since my days as a talk show, ever since my days of doing local talk radio in Wickenburg, Arizona, I have supported Ron Paul and have attempted to raise money on his behalf. However, in the last few months, I am certain that many of the listeners of the Common Sense Show have noticed that I have been dead silent on the subject of Ron Paul, of the Ron Paul campaign. I was silent for some very salient reasons, as I was beginning to have some grave concerns over the intestinal fortitude and direction of the Ron Paul campaign. All right, now let me interrupt this for a moment here. What you see here is a man pouring out his soul, a man being just deadly honest with his feelings. And this is, I'll put a link to this page over at Freedom's Phoenix, and you can read the whole thing for yourself there. Here's a man who really, really believed that Ron Paul was going to try to win the presidency. And he not only gave his own money, but he encouraged others to give money to support this. And then to watch everything happen. Let me jump back into another spot here. He says, if you want to live in the past, continue to support the Ron Paul campaign and watch as your monetary donations will absolutely slip down the rabbit hole and end up in Mitt Romney's coffers. Do not contribute to your own demise, as we will undoubtedly witness the November election consisting of Obama versus Obama 2.0. And as the 2012 election will consist of New World Order sock puppet teleprompter reading Barack Obama versus New World Order sock puppet and teleprompter reading Mitt Romney. This is now unavoidable. Well, certainly it is. Of course it is. That's the way it was going to be right from the beginning. And I told you so. 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 I don't know what else I can say about this. You place so much belief in a person, and then when that crashes, what can you say about it? It's tragic. It's painful. I know. One of the listeners of this podcast over on badquaker.com, on response to podcast number 158 about the broken window fallacy and the great man theory, I'm thinking by reading the comments that are made over there on that, I'm thinking maybe that they had not heard the other following podcasts, because what I tried to do last week was I tried to lay the groundwork as slowly and gently as possible, day by day through the week, because I wasn't sure exactly what day that Rand was going to make his brutal announcement, but I knew that it was coming. It was just a matter of time. So I was trying to build up a little bit of reserve there and let people see that it was the great man theory that that Ron Paul was something special, that he had, that the universe had created him specifically for this time or whatever. And that's just not true. If there was a market for what Ron Paul was saying, and since there was a market for it, the fact that Ron Paul said it, if there was no Ron Paul, then somebody else would have been saying it. Lots of us were saying it. Many of us were saying it. The difference with Ron Paul is that he was in a position where people heard him and were able to respond to that. But if there was no Ron Paul, there was this great desire after 9/11 happened and the Patriot Act was passed, and all the oppression that began to come from the U.S. government around the world, and including on the people of America, that oppression created the need for someone to stand up and say, this is wrong, this stuff's happening because of this. That need was there. And if Ron Paul didn't exist, someone else would have been there. Many of us were there yelling this stuff, but Ron Paul was the one that stood out. Had there been no Ron Paul, somebody else would have filled that gap. Somebody else would have been in that position, and we would be discussing someone other than Ron Paul right now. The difference is, Ron Paul was a member of the government. He was a part of the government when he was saying all these things. Had he not been, then the direction of the Liberty Movement may have gone away from this desire to serve the government even further. If it had been somebody like... If it had been someone with a truer discussion of anarcho-capitalism rather than this silly notion that if we got back to the Constitution, we'd be okay. You see, that was the Ron Paul lie right there. Getting back to the Constitution is not okay. It will not bring you incremental liberty. You cannot use the aggression of government to fix government. That's the flaw in the Ron Paul story, in the Ron Paul movement. And Ron Paul embraced that and passed it out knowing that it was wrong. Now, what would have happened if it would have been somebody else, somebody truer to anarcho-capitalist views, who was saying all the same things about how evil the Federal Reserve is and how the bubbles were being formed and how all these things, if somebody other than Ron Paul had been saying them, then right now we wouldn't be having a discussion about Rand Paul selling out to Mitt Romney and the GOP. And we wouldn't be having a discussion about Ron Paul, about the Ron Paul bubble popping. We wouldn't be having that discussion. Instead, we would be moving on, not wrapped up in the cult of a personality. And that's what the Liberty Movement has got to get away from, is the idea that we have to have one personality that will save us, that will step in and do these wonderful things for us. We don't need an individual personality to do these things. We can all do them ourselves. We're mature enough to let go of mommy and daddy and stand on our own two feet and make our own way. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, and less about how to follow a great man, go to badquaker.com. Thank you very much for listening.